This episode of The A-Team is brought to you by FaceToFaceGames.com, Canada's number one source for Magic the Gathering card singles.
Oh, okay. That might have been good. But he sold me a lot of cards for a good price also.
Oh, did he? You got owned! Oh, fuck! You got owned by Jerry T!
Yeah.
Welcome to the A-Team Podcast, brought to your ears by ManaDeprived.com, home of Canadian Magic.
In 2010, a crack Magic playing unit was sent to prison by the DCI court for crimes they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a federal pound-me-in-the-ass prison to the Canadian underground. Today, still wanted by Wizards of the Coast, they survive as podcasters of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can listen to The A-Team.
KYT.
It's just like, why? Not everything I do is like horrible. You can't have it both ways, old man.
Jay Boosh.
Damn it! Why am I always so ahead of the curve, and then somebody like Owen makes a deck popular, and now I sound like every deck brewer on the planet?
Scotty.
It's actually a secret ploy for her to get you two to spend more time together. Your mom next levels you.
And Jeremy.
Do you know how hard it is to buy Korean singles?
No.
And when you put Korean singles into Google's, do you know what you get? You don't get Magic cards.
And now, the A-Team.
Hey everyone, welcome to episode 192 of the A-Team Podcast. Mr. Scotty Mack here. I am joined, as always, by my three most wonderful friends and co-hosts. So am I. KYT, Jeremy Schofield, and the one, the only, Jay the Mouth motherfucking Boosh. What's going on, boys? It's awesome. We are large and in charge this evening. So hopefully you guys are all ready for a rousing show.
Is it going to be rousing?
It's going to be rousing.
Rousing maybe, show?
Maybe even arousing, dare I say?
Ooh.
Maybe rabble-rousing?
Maybe rabble-rousing.
Ooh.
Could be a thing.
I'm going to have to get some new sleeves because you can't reuse those.
You cannot reuse those. So, anyways, we all played Magic this week, I think. Jeremy inclusive, which is really exciting stuff. For the first time, we are all up to date on some of the things that are happening in the Magic universe. So,
congratulations to us.
Finally. for the wrestling fans out there, finally, the Boosh has come back. To the Magic! There was a WMCQ and PTQ combination in Toronto this past weekend. KYT and I both attended, along with a whole whack of you that are listening to the show. I played in the PTQ on the Saturday, and then I went hung out on the Sunday. I obviously geisted for the PTQ. Surprise, surprise.
It was
I actually ended up going X3, which is pretty good for a 9-rounder. It was all right. I would
did
have
you
placed
play all the rounds.
I did play all the rounds. I would have placed a lot higher had I not taken those three losses right in the beginning of the tournament.
Ooh.
But as it has come to my attention to be known, I reduked it. And because, you know, when you're part of a team, you can't let the team down. You've got to get as much information as you can and as much experience so you can contribute, you know, to the family, as it were. So yeah, so I played out all the rounds and ended up finishing higher than a bunch of my other friends, so that's cool. And you know, it's really hilarious to watch the people at the last table, and they're like playing for their, you know, potential winning in or potential top 16, and then they lose. And they're like, oh. And I'm like, oh, man, that's rough. Where'd you end up? And they're like, X3. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Play out all your rounds, folks, especially if you have friends that are playing in the same tournament as you that are better than Magic at you. You need to play all the rounds. But yeah, deck is still well-positioned. I lost one game. I lost my first round to, like, an error which could have pushed me, could have actually led to a win. Who knows? It would have been a tough one. Would have at least got a game three. Bob is an out. Your opponent's Bob is an out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I conceded before letting him reveal his Bob card, which would have killed him, because I'm bad at Magic.
Yeah.
And then I played against the mirror where I was, like, completely under-practiced and way over-aggressive. So I lost that one. And then I lost to two Mulled of Fives and the Nut Draw against from Tron. So that happens. And then I decided not to lose anymore. And I beat
How did that work out?
Well, I lost one game after that.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, one game. It was pretty sick. I just turned it on and I was like, that's it. No more of this bullshit. It's time to win. And I did. Yeah, I played against, like, all sorts of, like, ridiculous stuff. Like, there, I didn't play, so I played 9 rounds. I did not play against the same deck twice.
Holy.
Yeah. So that was something pretty outstanding. So, yay modern. KYT, how'd you do? What'd you pilot?
I piloted, Willy. I asked Willy for his latest list. For Junk, it just took down the GP that we played at in Boston. And it was perceived to be just like, well, it's really depending on what you expect the metagame to be. If you expect the meta to be a lot of mirrors, then you want the Lingering Souls for that, and you want the Lingering Souls for Affinity. So that's the type of feel Willy expected in Boston. And, you know, I think ultimately black-green-based decks ended up being the most popular deck, followed by Malirapod, and then followed by blue-red, and then Affinity. And okay. So I'm always expecting more of the same. You're hoping when you're playing this, I agree with Willy, you sort of hope to dodge pod, which is funny because it's like what's considered by the pros is the best deck, but it's still not, it's not like it's piloted significant by a significant amount of people in the field. So I said I'd play that, started off 4-0. My first two wins were against the mirror, so I probably got a bit luckier in drawing, you know, more Lingering Souls. And turned out one of the cards that Willy suggested for the sideboard that I had emailed Jeremy and Scott about, Sever the Bloodline. I was asking him, like, this is kind of a weird card because it's not, I don't think it's that great, but it's good against Pod. And in some situations, if you're losing the Lingering Souls battle, you want that against your opponent. And sometimes, you know, they have a Goyf or they have a Bob and you don't. So it allows you to come back from behind, and when you can flash it back, you're getting massive value out of that card. So I was pretty happy with running that in my sideboard ultimately, despite still being unsure and being told by others that it was probably a very funky idea. Then I faced a Genesis Engine deck, token deck with Purphoros.
What?
He mulled to like 4 or 5, so I never got to see it going. I basically, in that game, also Thoughtseize them. And was able to just easily win that match. So I never saw anything. I'm just like, Thoughtseize, this card? Like, the only relevant card that you have in your hand? Then I beat Blue Moon, sort of. More Mono Blue Shackles with Blood Moons in the sideboard. And felt pretty good with myself and my deck choice. And then the wheels started coming off. I faced Scapeshift, which is, I think, traditionally, not a very good matchup, and it gets worse if you're not Jun, because you don't have access to Slaughter Games, and he was able to get Scapeshift in Game 3. In Game 2, like, I had him dead on board, but it's one of those spots where he could easily top deck Scapeshift or Snapcaster Mage and win there. Thankfully, during the match, my opponent did not know how Relic of Progenitus actually worked. He didn't realize that it also exiled his entire, his own yard as well. And he had a scapeshift in there. So he basically killed a bunch of his outs by cycling with it. So he's like, that's we're not practicing with the deck. And I'm like, yeah, thank God. But game three, he got there. Then I end up losing to Pascal Minard playing Hate Bears, which I don't actually know. Obviously, haven't played that this matchup a ton, this specific matchup. I wasn't really sure who had the edge, but playing game one, it just felt like a huge mountain to climb when you sort of you have to tap out to play certain threats like Goy for whatever or Liliana, but then they can they get so much value with their Flicker Wisp. They make a ton of 3/3s, and you're just like, or when you're trying to terminate or abrupt decay something, like you're always scared that they can just blink it out, especially if they have a vial at three or something. Yeah. So game one, he blew me out. Game two, I was able to get the edge, had enough removal. Game three, I had a speculative keep. I had two fetch lands, but like five really strong cards in the matchup. I remember like a few abrupt decays and like maybe even like a sever somewhere, like cards that I felt really comfortable about. But of course, I tanked for a bit because if he goes turn two Arbiter, I am beyond boned at that point, especially. But I think I could maybe recover if I was able to lucky enough to draw like lands off the top. But he was able to follow the Arbiter with the Thalia, and that basically seals my fate because I can't even, like, I did end up drawing a normal land, but with having a fetch in play, I can't even abrupt decay the Arbiter and fetch because I have to pay for fucking Thalia. So I have to, like, he time warps me because I have to tap two in order to fetch the third land to be able to kill anything. And that was more than enough time for him to finish me. I'm still not that sure because if he doesn't have Arbiter, I feel like I'm going to win that game. But yeah. If he does, I felt like I was willing to gamble in this matchup because I did feel like a dog overall. So I was more than willing to gamble because of that and didn't pay off. But I don't think I regret my decision. Does that make sense, Jared, at all?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I can get behind that. It's just... it's such a tough deck because you're playing without a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And especially like beyond like the vial and stuff like that, like there's just so many different angles that can kind of come at you. So it can be very difficult to play into. But I also find that the deck is very inconsistent. So it's sometimes you just have to like bite your lip and go for it.
Yeah. I felt like obviously if I was on the play, I'm a favorite to win that game with my hand. So it was, like that deck needs Arbiter on the play to be really dominant and Thalia on the play, like, et cetera. So lost to that. And then, went 4-0, ended up like 5-4, like beating only Mono Black Infect, which had zero chance against me. That entire match, like I was so far ahead of the game that I almost accidentally drew from my opponent's deck in like the last turn when I'm about to kill him. Because I was so just interested in the game. I'm just like, oh, whatever. But I mean, the format is just very diverse. And sometimes it is what it is. It is the matchup lottery in some case. I mean, Scapeshift and Hate Bears, I found, were unfavorable matchups. And I lost to them. So, it's just going to happen. So
now, I have a question, though. So how different is that from Legacy right now? Because, like, isn't Legacy basically the same thing?
I haven't played it in years, so... Jer?
Well, just, like, I don't play Legacy, but I watch Magic, so that's kind of where I base my impression of. And it seems like if you're watching, like, an SCG event, early on in the event, you see all these crazy decks, and sometimes one of those crazy decks rises to the top, and when that crazy deck comes to the top, it does very, very well because nobody's planned for it. Nobody's ready for it. And it's what I always tell people who want to play, like, the Tier 2 decks or... their own little pet projects is play a lot of your deck and play against the best decks, because then you'll have an idea of what you need to do to beat those decks. Whereas they have no idea what they need to do to beat you. They might be playing with something that's got a lot more horsepower, but you know what you're doing better in that matchup. So you can kind of, make your cards get more value because you understand the interactions of how that match has to play out. So I think that that's kind of like the same thing for Modern, is that there's lots of decks out there. The better players playing the best deck are usually going to work their way to the top because they're just better players at it. But you're going to have a guy who's going to know his deck very, very well, and he's going to be able to beat the field because he has more experience and he understands the matchups better than what his opponent's going to understand, because who actually plays against elves in Modern?
Yeah.
You know, like that kind of thing does come up. And that's the one thing that we've heard about Modern from all of our guests throughout the last year is it's not about playing the best deck. It's about playing the deck you know best. So,
Yep.
I think that kind of lends itself into, you know, that whole answer of that it's a wide open format. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people who would prefer if it wasn't as wide open a format, because sideboards are so killer. If you don't have an answer in your sideboard, like, there are so many hard counters in sideboards. And the decks that you board against, like, you can do some real damage to them. Just playing with Leyline of Sanctity, I was playing against, like, red decks online, because that's all you ever do online is play against red decks. And it's like, I drop a Leyline of Sanctity, my opponent just concedes. It's just that simple. And it's like, okay, so you're not playing wear and tear. Like, I think you've made a mistake. It can't be that expensive. But, you know, like, that's what you run into, is that you run into all these different decks and people have to have a plan for you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here listening to all this and I'm looking back at the metagame, Scott, and it was a lot, at least near the early parts of the tournament where I was like 2-0, 3-0, 4-0.
Yeah.
The top tables, actually maybe none of those copies ended up making it into the final eight, but I felt there were a lot of junk people copying from the GP, and yep. There were also a lot of burn around me.
It's funny because I heard that there was a lot of burn. I didn't see any at all. I heard there was a lot.
That's the thing that I've been told is a very Toronto thing. Like when we traveled to the GP in Toronto where it was Modern,
yeah,
that's what we heard right out of the gate, is that Toronto loves burn.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's
weird. That
might just be a
regional thing for you guys.
It's weird. Yeah, I played against... what did I play against here? I played against Junk, I played against Amir, I played against Tron, I played against Affinity, I played against Pod, I played against Blue-White, I played against the other Pod, Kiki Pod, and I played against Jund, and I don't know, whatever the other one was, I didn't write it down. But, like, that's a lot of different decks.
Oh, yeah.
But now I'm sitting here thinking, if I went back in time, this may have been the one of the perfect opportunities that I mentioned weeks ago to have played Boggles.
Oh, I think so.
Because Twin is maybe at its at a low.
Yeah.
Right now, yeah.
Yeah.
And it may be the deck to pick up this weekend even. One of the tier 2 decks that Jeremy's talking about. Like,
yeah, like I've got a PTQ coming up this Saturday.
Yeah.
So it's my PTQ, and I know at our GPT that we just had last weekend, second place went to Boggles.
Ooh. Wow.
Like, if Green Black's the deck to be, like, yeah, they've got Liliana, but they don't got much outside of that.
Yeah.
Like, Abrupt Decay can get some interesting.
And they're shaping.
But yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's one. The other one is so notable. Canadian World Magic Cup member from last year, Andy Peters, fan of the show, my car made for Boston, it was a blue-white-red twin player forever.
Okay.
At this last Modern PTQ that we were at, he was on blue-red twin.
Oh.
Okay. So he messages on Twitter today, and he's like, so am I going to see you Saturday? I'm like, no. He goes, well, guess what I'm playing? And I'm like, no idea. He goes, Blue Moon. I'm like, really? That's where we're headed with the format, right? It's like twin players are like, nope, fuck it. Blood Moon, kill you.
Huh.
All right. So that's where we're headed. Ugh.
You have any idea what you're playing, Jer? I talked to Zach Hill, asked me how my testing with Blood Rats went. I told him I didn't feel like it was good enough. It wasn't better than Jund, because you need Abrupt Decay for problematic cards like Shackles that I actually ended up facing in the PTQ. So, what are you feeling, Jer?
I'm going to be on Dead Guy Ale. I've been playing it since, like, pretty much the first PTQ was won by it. It's like, I think, like, the first Modern PTQ of this season, a guy won with Dead Guy Ale, so I've been testing that deck the whole season. I've gone a lot of different places with it. I think I have about 70 cards locked.
but I'm trying to figure out what to do with some of my last slots. Like right now I'm considering putting some Bitter Blossoms in there somewhere. Cause I've gone like the route that like BBD did with Sorin, and I've tried some of that and I like it, but I don't like it. I feel like the card, what it does good is, you know, just putting a token out each turn. The minus two effect almost feels like it's a win more with the way that my games play out. And if I'm going to be doing something like that, jamming a Bitter Blossom on two is probably way more effective. So that's my thought process on it, but I don't really know if that's where I'm going to go. And then it's going to be coming down to sideboards also. So I feel like it's pretty reasonably placed right now, but it's going to be a matter to see what, you know, what I end up falling on in the next 48 hours here.
Well, what's the core look like again?
It's like six or seven discard spells through Inquisitions and Thought Seizes. It's Mutavaults, Lingering Souls, Liliana's, Pack Rats, Bobs. I'm still playing with the Tide Hall of Scullers because I like them. Then for removal, I've got Dismembers, I've got Dark Blast, I've got Slaughter Packs, just kind of that stuff, and a set of paths. So that, yeah, that's really the deck in a nutshell.
Do you have, like, are you playing Remaz, Baneslayer, like some of the older lists I've seen, or are you doing Wesco with Bladesplicer and Restos?
I'm not doing the Wesco style.
Okay.
I'm doing more of what was the original. Like, I took out all of the Brimaz, and I went in a little bit more of an aggressive route. Like, I just put in more removal spells. And that's where I actually made room for Sorin as well. And then the next game plan from there was I actually brought one Brimaz back in. I just felt like I needed another three-drop threat, a guy I could just kind of mize out.
Okay.
And it's worked out well for me. Every time I put two Brimaz in the list, though, I just hate it. So just one just seems to be the number. I don't have any good reason for that.
All right. But no, yeah. Baneslayers?
No Baneslayers. And Baneslayer might come back. Playing online without Baneslayer, it just seems like you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
Simply because, well, it's just the same shit over and over and over again. Like, that's what I'm always running into. So.
Yeah, I played against, Jackie was testing that too. It's like the Tide Hollow Scholar Aether Vial deck.
I actually was doing the Aether Vial. I pulled the Aether Vials out, just recently. Mm. It was really, really cool to Aether Vial a guy on my opponent's draw step.
Yeah.
Which was really fun. And pack ratting at the end of their turn on turn three. So it's like, yes, pack rat, make a rat.
Yes.
Those were very, very fun interactions. But the Aether Vial just, like, this deck has the ability to kind of fight the long game. And Aether Vial is just such a terrible late game draw. Mm. So that's kind
that
of
makes sense. Thought. I mean, I feel like if you're on a 4X pack rat deck, then who the fuck cares what your late game draws are?
Yeah, like,
so I don't know. I mean, like, all I can tell you is that, I mean, you're the one that's been playing and testing the deck, so like I don't take away that experience at all. All I can tell you is that from the other side of the table, the sheer raw mana efficiency and flexibility that that Aether Vial presented in the form of instant speed two drops was a fucking nightmare to deal with.
Yeah,
that's all I can tell you. So Pack Rat's a hell of a magic card. Perfectly fair and balanced. Like, I don't know, man. So.
Someone done fucked up.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's that. That was the PTQ experience. And then, of course, Saturday night, KYT came back, and Kyle and Avery, of course.
Yes.
And Jackie and Tyler, we all came back, and we conspiracy drafted at my place on Saturday, which was awesome, because it was like the first time that we had all been together since GP Toronto 2010.
Maybe.
Is that a
question?
No, 2012 for sure. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, it was crazy, just crazy. And it was just a lot of fun. We all drafted. It was the first time that that Avery and Kyle had done it. So that was wicked. And of course, like being at the table with the Sharks, you know, was really funny because Jackie's like the most ridiculous conspiracy player ever on the face of the planet. But yeah, it was good. I actually ended up winning the draft with I was trying to stay open. And I got past the second pick, Ether Searcher.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So then I got the assault team, which is, like, the red guy for, like, 4 mana or whatever, 5 mana. When he comes into play, he gets a 1/1 counter for each tap land that everyone has.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I was, like, Ether Searcher for that guy.
I'm so bad at conspiracy with cards like that because I always look at them and just I'm like, yeah, this card is garbage because it is. And then I forget that it's, like, it's not garbage.
Yeah, in conspiracy and multiple, yeah. And so I've actually been finding that most, like, the last 3 conspiracy drafts that I've had, I've, like, been 100% humpbacking on those cards.
Oh, yeah, those cards are amazing in multiplayer.
Yeah, I ended up getting the red one on that, and then I also got the white one, and then I got past 3 of the Parlay Spirit cards.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, like, I had that deck, and I was, like, sort of the Defender deck, but then just, like, infinite spirits and infinite guys, and it was a lot of fun. It was pretty sweet. At one point, the spirit guy, like, you play, he's, like, he comes into play, and he's got 1/1 counter on him for each creature on the battlefield, so he's a 30-30, because, like, there's no rests in Conspiracy, and then, yeah, so then the turn after that, or 2 turns after that, I end up playing the red guy, the Ether Searcher into the other guy, and he's like a 29-29 or something. Anyways, game ended shortly after that. So
yeah, I forgot the power of Parlay, and I forgot that we were 6 players, so that made them, like, the token thing way better.
Oh, yeah, it's way better when that happened. Way better.
But it can actually miss in a 4-player game where you get one guy.
Yeah.
But when it's 6 and you got, like, 3 or 4, it's like, fuck me.
Yeah, I pulled 4, but, like, the average is you're only going to get, like, 2 or 3, but, like, I got 4 at that time, too, so it was really lucky. But, yeah, the deck was fun. It was really good. And it was just good to hang out and see everybody. That was a lot of fun.
So, the only thing that I wanted to mention was Scott played it correctly strategically, and I think I mentioned this, maybe I mentioned this on show already, but you always want to attack the red or black guy, because...
Correct.
They can kill you randomly. Like, they're like, oh, let's equal all their life totals. But then they kill you with either burn or, like, 2 sandbag siphon souls. So watch out for red and black guys that are just, like, standing around doing nothing because they're just trying to win the game when it's, like, when everyone's, like, at 5 or something. So and Scott did right by attacking Avery, who was, like, the only prominent black player.
Yeah, he was playing green-black, so he had, like, the biggest flyers that were stopping my flying cavalcade anyway, and nobody was really attacking him, and he had this grip full of cards, and I knew that I had passed him at least 1 tragic slip, and God knows whatever else is there, so I was just like, you know what, you have to go first. So I took him down.
Sorry, he took down Cal's son, Jay. Like that.
What a
boom.
Jerk.
Yep. I'm like, you, son, you were the first to die. Boom!
He's like, what?
So, it was good. What did you draft, KYT?
I drafted. Now, usually, I didn't want to draft the wall deck because I always do that.
Yeah.
So I wanted to try something. I wanted to try it to be funnier, have more fun. So I drafted every Grudge Keeper that I saw, and like every Will of Council card that I could possibly see, and with a combination of World Knit that allowed me to be able to, like, put all of the Will of the Council cards that I wanted in. So it was fun. Like, I love, I think black is always feels like the best card because it has Tyrant's Counsel or whatever, that common. It's, like, one of the best commons in the game, and it has all these other in common, like the Something of the Rose card.
Everyone discards 2 cards or all creatures get -2/-2.
Yeah, it's just
another,
like,
voting card. Yeah,
it's got, like, the black has some of the more powerful cards. It even has, like, outs to, like, the big bombs that you guys had. Like, I had a copy of the card where, like, you lose 5 life, but you get to destroy 2 non-black creatures. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
So, and that and Siphon Soul in a 6-player game, like, it's hard not to want to draft black because of that. Like, I feel it's the most attractive color. So I went with that, but you know, couldn't draw the one rare that I actually wanted to play. The you know the name, Scott, the Boros rare.
Sandra, yeah. Battle Seraph.
I really
that card's such a trap.
KYT got the World Knit. So like, start there. So he's like, yep, World Knit. And just play all these cards, play all these lands, nothing matters, play all of the bombs.
Yeah.
I just wanted to play it for the fun factor, because sometimes, you know, people just sit around and don't attack, which didn't happen this game. Like, eventually people just, like, say fuck you and killed you. But, like, in some games, everyone just sitting around and just be like, fuck that, your 15-15 has to fucking attack or something. And couldn't drive because, you know, World Knit made my deck super big, so... And I even mulliganed to try to get it, but wasn't going to mulligan to infinite.
Mulliganed in a World Knit deck, wow.
I wanted to find Bassandra.
What a fucking greedy prick. Well, Bassandra is such a trap card, too. It's so bad. Every time I've ever had a Bassandra, it's like, play this, and then everyone's like, oh, shit, and then it just dies instantly. Instantly dies.
Well, and I was sad I couldn't get to see it in play, and died. Died in the usual, like, where Jackie's like, well, I'm going to die anyway, so I might as well try to kill KYT before I die.
He's ruthless, man.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, we were in Portland, and we're like, let's play a fun Modern Masters draft just to have fun, and everybody will be fun, having fun, fun times. And he drafted, like, the Ultra Storm deck, like, Multra Turbo Storm, and just ranched everybody and had zero fun. Like, the whole, like, he was having fun just destroying you, but he wasn't having, like, casual, let's have fun. He was having, like, are you done yet? Yeah, okay, slam all these guys, you're dead, suck it, you're dead. Ah, 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 killed you, ah, I'm Jackie Chan, woo. And it was like, what the fuck?
Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Sometimes so. People are Jackie Chan.
Yeah, sometimes. Fucking goddamn it.
That guy's so, like, Scott and I agree, like, that guy, if he cared about winning competitively, could be a fucking force.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But he doesn't give a shit.
So Jay, you also drafted some Conspiracy this weekend.
Yeah, didn't I you? Played a 7-player. We were going to do 8, but I forgot that the guy that I invited was deathly allergic to cats, so he had to back out. So we played a... 7-player Conspiracy draft. It was pretty good. I also convinced the team to do like a what do we play? Oh, we played Arch Enemy Plane Chase. So you take a plane chase dice and you put a sticker on the side and you write Scheme on it. So you roll it, and if you hit Scheme, you just flip over an Arch Enemy Scheme.
Oh yeah.
So it's just like it's like an instant plane effect, basically, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So we're playing, and in game one, turn one starts, and we're playing the planar variant that Gavin somebody, Jeremy.
Gavin, like the Judge Gavin.
Yeah.
Gavin Duggan.
Gavin Duggan.
So he came up with a plane chase variant where instead of just flipping a random, you can find it online also if you're looking for super details, but instead of just flipping a random plane when you plane chase, what you do is you have the plane that you're on is in the middle of a cross. So it's in the middle, and then above it, below it, left and right are 4 other planes that you can go to. And then when you planes walk, you choose one of those, and all of the other planes except for the one you're going to and the one you're coming from get dumped. And then the like
are they
3
all
more,
revealed?
2 more get put back on. And yeah, they're all face up. They're all revealed. So you get
okay.
Pick. So yeah. What happens is you can also go back to a plane if you want. So of course, game one starts and we flip over. And the other thing is, like, in regular Arch Enemy, you just play on the plane that you flip. But in this version, because there's 5 that get flipped face up, you can pick which one you want to start on. So Neil, who goes first, picks Gnar Isle. Gnar Isle is put a counter on this at the beginning of your upkeep and then take that much damage. So it's a 7-player game, and so Neil takes 1, and then Dave takes 2, and then Sarah takes 3, and then it gets... And they're all trying now... By now, they're trying to get off this plane, right? And It gets all the way around to the guy right before me. So he's taken six, and then it gets to me, and I roll, and I flip Archenemy, our scheme. And I'm like, yay! And I flip the one that drain lifes everybody. So I gain 18, and I'm at 34 or 38 or something now. And then I'm like, well, I don't have anything to do on turn one. So since I'm at 35, I might as well pay to, basically roll again, because that's how Plane Chase works. You can spend a mana to roll the dice, and it's cumulative. So it's one, then two, then three. And I roll, and I hit Planeswalk. So they've Planeswalked away from Gnar Isle. The guy right before me got it. So he took six and then Planeswalked away. And then I roll the planar dice, and I'm like, well, since I didn't take any damage, I guess we'll go back to Gnar Isle. So Neil's taken, Neil took one on his turn one. It's now his turn two, and he takes seven. So he's taken eight. He's at 12 life, right? Okay. Then he rolls, and he hits Scheme. So he's like, sweet, because almost always those are super powerful. He hits Scheme, and Scheme gives him an extra turn. So he dies. So now he's dead. Then Dave takes a bunch and dies. Then Sarah takes a bunch and dies. Then Richard gets off of Gnar Isle and saves everybody. Except for it comes back around to me. I roll. I hit Plane Chase. And we go back to Gnar Isle.
Oh, God.
And that's how I won the game. I won the game with two lands in play. It was super fun. So then we played a second game, because, you know, obviously. And then what did they decide to do? They just killed me instantly. Yeah. And then basically I just sat around for a little while, and then I decided, nah, I'm going to go home. So yeah. I mean, I drafted a really sweet defender deck. I find, like, when you play with new players, nobody drafts a defender deck because, like, traditionally defenders are just so bad in limited formats, right? So I feel like they just don't understand the power level, which is difficult to understand. I mean, it's not intuitive, but yeah, I had a pretty sweet deck, and they were passing a lot of conspiracies and stuff like new players often do as well. And so of course I was reaping the benefits of that, but you know, it didn't matter because fucking Gnar Isle. So
that's fucking crazy. I haven't played Plane Chase or any of that stuff in a long fucking time. And it just seems like it's always too much for me. It's always too much for me. I can't.
Yeah, it's like EDH for new players too, right? Like they like playing one-on-one EDH, but then you start playing multi-EDH and they're just like, when it's their turn, they go, what's the biggest thing on the battlefield? It's all this stuff. Okay, I kill it. Go.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. Like, it's always felt like the chaos element drives me just bonkers. That's all it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like one thing can happen, and all of a sudden, like, the entire course of the game is totally upended, and it's just not even good.
That's understandable.
So, that's what makes me crazy. But yeah, other than that, it's pretty sweet. So you kicked ass. Was that the only... You drafted also, didn't you?
Yeah, I drafted some N15 Sunday, I guess it would have been. And that was sweet. We just did like a team draft. And, okay, so in the team draft format, there's no obviously timed rounds, obviously.
Right.
So we're playing this format, and then me and Adrian are basically playing like a similar deck. His is green, white... triplicate spirit deck, but he only got one triplicate spirits and got no raise the alarms.
Yeah.
And mine is the same, but I only got one triplicate spirit and two raise the alarms, but neither of us got any of like the big green fat guys that you convoke into. I mean, I got two of the convoke angels, but they didn't really do a whole lot for me because I never drew my triplicate spirits and never got to really play it anyway. So my deck was like blue white. Basically, it was a weird deck. So I had like three Frost Lynxes, and then I had things like Coral Barrier that I wasn't playing and stuff, because my deck like basically ended up being like a really fast like tempo deck, I want to say.
Okay.
But like I don't know, I had two of the angels that reset your life total that we decided not to play.
Oh God.
Like, we played only one of them because they cost, I think, 7 or something.
Yeah.
So we're like, okay, well, we'll just play one. You don't want to play both. And I think the entire time I did actually want to play both. Just it was just so good. And then I don't know, I just kind of like, I had like kind of like a weird deck. It was like supposed to be fast, but it was just like these weird convoke bombs, but I didn't have a whole lot of guys to convoke into. But I mean, like, my deck was 20 creatures, or creature spells, and then like 3 regular spells, which I think in this format is correct. I feel like if in this format, if you don't have like 18 creatures in your deck, I think you're doing it wrong. And yeah, even though like that's the exact opposite of the deck that I like to play, I just don't know how you beat like the green white deck if you don't have 18 creatures. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So me and Adrian are playing this game. He's playing green white with no worms. I'm playing blue white, convoke, no worms. I picked up a triplicate spirits in pack 2. I was originally going to play the blue red deck because I'd heard that it was good. I've never played it before. And that's what I was drafting, but the red was drawing up quite a bit, but the blue was wide open, like I said, like 3 frost lynxes and like a bunch of other really awesome stuff that I don't remember now because it was like a week ago. But I don't know, like, what are the good blue cards that you pick up in a deck like that? Like, I had lots of flyers. I had like the Welkin Turn. I had, what else did I have? I had like a Quickling. Yeah, I just had lots of cool stuff. And then, like, my white was just, like, this, like, over-the-top end game-ending stuff. Like I said, like, 2 angels, the Angel of the Masses, the Triplicate Spirits, and then I had 2 Raise the Alarms, which ended up being really good just as, like, a, like, on their turn 2, or on my turn 2, play nothing. On their, like, turn 3, when they attack with 2 guys, just block and kill both of them for a Raise the Alarm. And a lot of people won't make that play because they want to get the extreme value of, like, of the you know, Raise the Alarm into Triplicate Spirits, like, turn 3 or whatever, turn 4. Yeah. But, like, in my deck, it was almost always better to just go for the block and chump. But anyway, so me and Adrian played probably an hour-long game 1, because there's no time, and we just ended up just playing just forever, because nobody could break, like, the stalemate.
Yeah.
And then... we just ended up, like, you know, Dan had the black-red super aggressive Rabble Master deck, and I ended up beating, I was the only guy that beat him, but I think Dan just tends to, like, how do you feel about people scooping early, KYT? You're the most competitive drafter that we have, but, like, if you're playing, like, the super competitive black-red deck, like, the one that's, like, all the hasty guys, all the low guys, and just burn and kill you out, and then, like... you get chump, like, your first guy dies and your second guy dies, either by blocking or removal. Even though you're both, say, at, like, 20 and 19, like, would you scoop if they played a guy and you had nothing?
I don't think so.
That's, like, way early.
Yeah, like, I just feel like that's a really early time to scoop. I mean, you know, Dan probably, I think he missed 1 or 2 land drops. But, I mean, I had nothing. Like, my deck was really slow, right? So, I mean, I just think scooping that early, I don't think that you should subscribe to, like, the never scoop philosophy, because I think that's stupid and bad, but I definitely think that there's, like, a time and a place to scoop, and I think, like, when you're both so early and all you did was, like, lose, you know, a couple of early guys, I feel like that's not the time.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you.
So, yeah, so there's that, and then... Oh, man. So the other thing that was funny, our team, all 3 of us were playing blue. None of us were playing red. None of us were playing green.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. It was a weird draft. But yeah, but we ended up winning the team draft. I mean, there was there's nothing worth any money whatsoever in the team draft. So
just bragging rights. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we still got the prizes and stuff, but it just, they weren't worth any. Dollars. I think, like, it was like it was an Ajani or a Court of Calling was like the first prize, and then, like, whoever didn't get either of those got everything else.
Jeez.
Like, because that was it. There was literally nothing else in, like, in the pool worth any money. So it kind of sucked for that regard. But yeah. I still liked winning, and I still like, you know, doing well. It's a really good format. I really like M15. I'm finding I can't get enough of it. Like I went to a store to draft on a Sunday.
Okay, I get it. But like, what about it are you really liking? Like, is it balanced? Is like,
I'm not, to be honest with you, I'm not sure. I feel like it is balanced. You know, and I mean, I feel like I can actually play it. That goes a long way. Like, if I can't figure out the format, then obviously I don't want to play it. So that's not to say, like, it's a bad format or anything, but, like, I just couldn't figure out a lot of the last couple of formats, and I couldn't figure out how they were good. I couldn't figure out why, for example, I could never beat a Nessian Asp, but Nessian Asp could always beat me. And me and Simon Lee actually talked about this at length, because we command-centered a draft, and it was like, so we go to like do this draft, and we find in this format, which like was the Journey to Nyx or whatever, like the block, we find like what ends up happening is you get beat by a bunch of stuff, and then you try to do the exact same thing, and then you still lose. Like, so a guy goes 3-0 with the whatever deck, the God's Willing white deck that has all that, you know, crazy stuff, and you end up he goes 3-0 easily, and you end up just getting smashed, and you try to build that deck, and when you build that deck, somehow you still get smashed by something else, and so it's really difficult to like try to play a format where you have no fucking clue why you're losing and how to win, because you feel like you're doing everything right. So I feel like that's a big thing for me in M15, and I don't know if it's because I like just like the cards better, so I'm like willing to put in the time to figure it out, or if because it's like super easy and I'm stupid or what. But yeah, so I like that about it. I like the cards. I think I really like the feel that this is what M14 should have been, with the whole 20th anniversary of Magic.
Especially like, with like the throwback of the flavor of the souls.
Yeah, that's
and
what
stuff.
I mean. Like, I really think it's cool that you have like Soul of New Phyrexia, and it looks Phyrexian, and then you have like Soul of Chandelar, and they look like the things that they're doing. And a lot of people don't even know what Chandelar is, right? But you at least kind of, you can look into that based on what you have, or based on hearing it, you're like, oh, what's that? Where's that cool plane? What is that from? You know, just things like that. I think that's really fun for me anyway. I would like it if, like, there was less slivers. I think that's, like, a total waste of a bunch of cards. But, you know. And, I mean, like, and I think it's, like, I think there's cool interactions. Like, you can get the O-ring sliver with, the sliver hive and, like, actually be playing, like, a combo deck in Limited. That's very cool. But, yeah, and I just, you know, the Convoke mechanic is very good, but it's not, like, overpowered, I find.
Yep.
And I like the blue cards. That goes a long way.
It's funny that you like the blue cards, because it's like almost 100% accepted that blue is miserable.
Is what, sorry?
Is miserable.
Yeah, like the blue isn't as good as it has been in other sets, for sure. But I like things like Frostlinks. I think that's a very good card, and I think it's because I like Delver, to be honest with you.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very tempo color.
Yeah, I like that. I like going like play a guy, tap down your blocker, and attack you. Like, I like playing cards that give me such an advantage like that, where you just feel so fucking hopeless. But not counterspells that you just whine about it on Reddit or something. You know? Like, I like that stuff. I like going, like, Frostlinks your guy, fucking, you know, murder you with a guy, go, untap Frostlinks. Or, like, when you're playing particularly aggro, I like going, like, Coral Barrier. And then you're like, fucking shit, how do I even get past that? Like, now I'm scooping to a wall. You know?
It's a wall with a 1/1 beater.
Yeah, an island walking shit. Boom!
How do you wall? Boom.
They zoom. And I mean, like, the red cards are very interesting. Like, even the auras, like Hammer Hand or whatever, where it's like, you fucking, a guy can't block and my guy gets haste.
Yeah. That card's insane.
Like, that's so cool to me. And you know what? it's so good, but it's not fucking, what was that? It's not Madcap skill good. Like, Madcap skill's ruined a lot of Limited, because it was just like guy Madcap skills, even if the guy was horse shit, you know, you can't lose, you know, basically.
I beat Hain in a money draft because my drunk ass self knew that if I just drafted a bunch of madcap skills and played 15 land, I would win.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah, exactly. And you probably won easily.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Yeah, so I like those cards. I like that stuff's cool. I mean, I'm still really upset that, like, Doomblade costs 5, and in the next set it'll probably cost 6, and then it'll cost 100. Like, that's annoying to me. But, you know, other than that, that's why I like it
so far. KYT, you played in the WMCQ. You played Standard.
Yeah.
Did you play anything good?
It was all right. I played the Sam Black deck. That's V and Gao piloted, which is
Cool. I want to play that. Is it good?
Rimaz Packrat deck.
Rimaz Packrat. That sounds fucking hard.
And Precinct Captain. Holy shit. Yeah.
So, man, I don't even remember what deck I beat. My mind is completely blank.
Did you only beat one?
Yeah, I went 1-2 drop.
Nice work.
I lost against Jun Planeswalkers, which rough because they have mortars and they have Caryatid and Courser, which is why I think Sam ultimately said he didn't play it in his WMCQ because those are the cards that he was afraid of. Mm. And he had opted for mono blue, but I mean sometimes like your mono black deck, sometimes your thoughts like I lost in 3 games, and sometimes you just thought he's pack rat and get there. And funnily enough, what he ended up doing, this is Phil Garreau from Quebec City, was he maybe if he didn't have this card, I would have won. He took a Nissa to put a Liliana, and it allowed him to tutor. One game he tutored wrong. He basically tutored for Big Garrick, the new one, to kill a rat, but I still had lethal on the board, so he just died. I needed to top deck in a Johnny, too. But he could have easily tutored for Mizium Orders and wiped out, like, 3 of my rats or something. And it was weird. It was weird when he played it. It always felt really good against me because I think against this specific configuration, like Brimaz, Precinct Captains, and all these like little guys, unless I have like one of the 2 copies of Desecration Demon, if he just Liliana's minuses, even if I kill Liliana and he gets mortars, it's enough of a blowout. And with him still having his like Caryatids and Courser laying around after that to be able to, all he has to do is get like another big time Planeswalker to kill me. So it felt like a rough matchup, but again, I'm fine with Thoughtseize into Packrat. That gives me free wins sometimes. And I lost against a burn deck that's just Boros Burn with like the with Phoenixes and Young Pyromancer.
Yeah.
Came down to game 3, came down to him having 0 cards, me being at 4, and he was able. I had a Phoenix, Chandra's Phoenix, under a Banisher Priest, which isn't that great, but my sideboard didn't have any great cards again for that matchup, so I just brought it in. And he was able to. I was at 4. But he also had Fire Dancer in play. So he top decks Shock. Shocks my Priest, brings me to 2, gets his Phoenix back, and hits me for 2, and I'm dead. But he had a lot of live outs, so I was basically a coin flip. But like he had to draw a land, a Chain to the Rocks, or like some relevant, like a creature, like a Young Pyromancer, or even another Phoenix would have been fine, so I was probably like a 50-50 chance to win that, but you know, that's how that matchup and I guess losing the Scape Shift sometimes feels. Will I play the deck again? Maybe. It felt fine. I think the mana was definitely rough, even though with a lot of the pain land sometimes. And even if you do have mana, sometimes it's mana confluence and caves of Koilos, and you're just like paying 2, so you're like really low.
Yeah.
So that's a problem, but it has promise. I mean, but if green devotion decks are big, it's just tough to look at your Soldiers of Pantheon and Precinct Captain and look at them and say they're good cards because they have carried in Courser. Like, you're just like, these cards feel so bad. And but what I had fun playing, like testing, like I tweet about it, and I may have even talked about on the show last week, was like Genesis Hydra. That card is just too fun.
So because you did so well in the WMCQ, you actually had the opportunity to spike the fuck out of a draft.
Yeah.
Which was the nice little segue down into that I was looking for there.
I just realized that we didn't talk about me, like, sucking ass at WMCQ. So I played a draft because I dropped early. Normally, I would play more rounds than that. But because the PTQ in Montreal, hosted by Face-to-Face Games, is actually the first week of M15, Corset PTQ season. So it'll be M15 limited. And I just want to get some practice in because I can't buy a win online. I haven't won a single A4 in the longest time. And this is the hardest format for me to win, it seems, to win a queue since I can remember for some reason. I just never get past the white deck. I'm always some bad green-black dredge deck, and I just never get there. And in this draft, thankfully, I was past a very solid green-red deck and was able to go all the way.
Was it just green-red, or is that like a deck?
Well, that's the thing. That's the deck I always play, and I've just been crushing A4s with it.
So. But is it like a deck, or is it just green and red cards that are good?
Green and red cards that are good.
Like, I'm trying to think. Oh.
Because, I didn't, like, the reason I ask is, like, so for example, like, I didn't realize that there was a dredge, like, an actual dredge deck.
Yeah.
Like, and it's green, black, and then there's, like, a bunch of things that just, like, flip over basically 3 or 4 cards into your yard, and then you, like, reanimate them or get them back, or you play that stupid snake guy that comes in as, like, a fucking 80-80, and then, you know. And I didn't realize that was, like, a real deck. I'd never seen that before, so that's why I asked if, like, red-green is also a real deck, because I've never heard anyone actually, like, say, like, oh, you know, the red-green X deck or whatever, and I just wondered if maybe it was just because it's just, like, a good combination of colors, or if maybe there was some kind of underlying synergy that I missed.
You just take the good cards from all the best formats. Like, you take the 7-drop worm with Convoke, you take the other Convoke dudes, you take the guy who counts cards in graveyards because red has lots of removal.
Yeah.
Right.
Early red dorks.
You take the Genesis Hydra that you passed because you're a Luxac.
Wow.
And you hope, and one of the best in commons is Kurt Chieftain. So you usually have a
that
sick
guy is a half house.
Yeah, that guy's good.
So funny you should mention.
Yeah,
Kurt Chieftain. KYT unfortunately demonstrated his awe-inspiring draft skills at the table. Funny story that I'd like him to tell, but KYT, you basically open a pack and you're looking at.
I'm looking at Kerchieftain and Cone of Flame as the clearly two best cards in the pack.
And this is like pick 2?
This is actually my first pack.
Oh, okay.
I open it. And it's like... And maybe there's like an okay white card. Like maybe a Conscripting Sliver. I forget. There was like third card that was a tier below these two cards. And Jackie's to my left. Jackie Chan. So... I just think, like, Cone of Flame is too good offensively and defensively, and it just doesn't lock me to green-red necessarily. So I slammed that and passed Kerchieftain to Jackie. And this is just pick 1, right? Like, I think he had to assume I had to have taken Cone of Flame because there's only very few commons that you would take, if at all, over Kerchief.
Would you take, like, Lightning Strike?
I might just because it's, like, more... It keeps you more open, but Kerchieftain's certainly more powerful.
I take Cone of Flame over Kerchieftain over Lightning Strike.
Commons?
Huh?
As a common? Like, those are the three... Like, isn't Kerchieftain...
No, those are
common?
2 uncommons and a common.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's what I was confused, because KYT said common.
Oh no, there was like a third card that was really good. I forget. That's what I'm saying. So I take Cone of Flame, and then Jackie to my left just picks Kerchiefed naturally, which I don't blame him. I think that's the correct pick from that pack, not really knowing. Maybe I take a stab wound, maybe. I don't know. Maybe he thinks I'm crazy. But then he despite me taking red and green, the rest of the pack, he also ends up red and green.
Wow. And so he's basically just taking KYT's leavings.
Impacts 1 and 3. And when we like spread out our decks, like at the end, I think he lost in the second round. It's just like my deck was just like a far superior version than his. So he's like, fuck. But like sometimes you have to do that, and like you can't assume in the first like even 3 or 4 picks sometimes, and some packs can have like over 5 or 6 like first picks easy. Like Triplicate Spirits, Lightning Strike, Cone of Flame, like a bomb rare or something like that. And then it's you might be thrown off by Signal early. And although Jackie had a decent deck, it wasn't on my level. And I forget. I don't even remember the combinations, the rest of the cards in my deck. I just know I had Genesis Hydra.
You played the big black idiot too.
I splashed for Nightfire Giant.
He got the Nightfire Giant. He had Genesis Hydra for sure. He had 2 Rummaging Goblins that I don't think he even played both of. Yeah, like, just the deck was ridiculous.
It's funny because Nightfire Giant at the pre-release was like universally panned, but it's like so good now. It's like one of the best cards in black.
It was panned at your pre-release?
Yeah.
Jeez, your pre-release was weird.
Yeah, very weird.
Well, like I said, fuck, even after the pre-release, like, people are passing Soul of White.
Oh, man.
Soul of White.
Soul of White, the best card.
The best card in the set.
Yeah. That's probably the best of White in Magic.
Probably?
It's got to play against what? Circle of Protection?
Jeez.
Yep.
Of White.
So I am looking forward to it's been really hard. I sometimes lose to like the insane green white deck that Jay has been talking about a lot. I mean, the format feels I just lost in right before the show. I lost in the second round of an 8-4. I had a sweet red blue deck where I was clearly the only blue drafter because I had 4 fucking Frostlinks in my deck.
Holy shit. Felt
really good, but still lost to the Raise the Alarm into Triplicate. Because Sanctified Charge is just what kills you out of nowhere. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm just, like, racing them. I'm, like, hitting for 2, hitting for 4 with my Frostlinks. But then if they have Triplicate Spirits and they have Sanctified Charge, they can just outrace you out of nowhere. So I wasn't able to beat that card, sadly. So hopefully for better luck, and I'm reading all these different articles. They definitely say, like, if 2 cards, like PV says, like, if there's a white, red, or blue card that are a similar value, he'll ignore the blue because the overall power level of blue is low, and I haven't really implemented that strategy yet, but it is true I'd rather have a lot of white, red cards than blue, so.
Yeah.
And then everyone, because green is so deep, I always think green is open when it's not really. It's just because it's deep. And I end up in that fucking green-black dredge deck because I pick up those cards that nobody else wants. So I see, like, I haven't drafted a white deck in a while, and I'm just hoping that I somehow open spirits and get past. Like, no one's going to pass that. So it's like, I just hope to draft white. That's all. And,
yeah, like, I opened spirits in my second pack after trying to draft green-red and just decided to go for white because I'd obviously been feeding white and, and, you know, just decided, fuck it, I'm not passing a Triplicate Spirits. There's nothing good in the pack anyway. So, you know, obviously I'm the best drafter, but...
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, the best.
I wanted to quickly go back to the WMCQ because I have a question for Jared, probably, though maybe for the rest of you. In the last round of the WMCQ, something very... And it has happened at GP Vancouver with John Stern needing... basically, John Stern, I think he was against Huey or something, where John was X and three. And basically, the only way he was able to get in, sneak in the top eight, because I was also X and three, I finished, I think, 11th. So X and three was sort of in the mix for top eight. But the only way to get there is, as usual, you have one certain pairing that does not draw. And so what was weird is that I remember talking about this on the show, is both matches were feature matches, and they were next to each other, and John beats Huey, and I guess the other two players, like, if they know that John wins, all they have to do is draw.
Yes, okay? Absolutely. That's what the spot was in, was that when John won that match, those two players look at each other, shake hands, and it's all done. Like, they're in.
Right. But either the guy wasn't sure that John won, because they tried to keep it a secret, obviously, John, on their side. So, or, like, the fact that he won game one and he was actually winning game two, the guy that like, obviously the guy losing, who had lost game one and was losing game two, was begging for the draw. But it's like, they begged so long, they actually, like, moved, like, afterwards they moved my pseudo feature match onto the camera because they were just talking for way too long that you actually got to see me at the tail end of the match beating Calcano. But they were just like, please, please just draw. And ultimately a draw didn't happen, and John was able to sneak in into eighth and ended up losing to Alex in top four, top eight or something.
Yeah.
And similar situation here actually happened at the WMCQ. Where I think this is everything that I've heard, so from many different sources, so I apologize if I don't have the facts straight, but basically David Kaplan was in the same spot as John of being able to sort of sneak in, but he would have needed a certain match to not draw.
Yeah.
And actually, no, there's more details than that, because at table three or something, Lucas Xiao was playing Brian Liu, GP Richmond champion, and if Lucas beats Brian, it was weird. It's just like tables three and four were playing.
Were they playing for position, or were they already locks and playing for positions, just playing Dream Crusher, or were they?
Okay, so Lucas was at table three, and he could beat Brian. He was locked even if he lost to Brian Liu, but
He was just playing for position.
Right, but Brian Liu was not locked, so he can kick out Brian and allow an X two to sneak in.
Yeah.
But that can only happen if I think the table, if table four, like table four was hoping that table three would draw so that they could draw or something. Okay. It was weird. So I'm trying to remember the exact detail, but without making the cast, like, stalling the cast.
Yeah, so just throwing out like a hypothetical, if table three plays then and they don't draw, then table four gets themselves into a position where the X2 that could sneak in might have better breakers or something like that, knock one of them out, so they may have been forced to play in that spot.
Right, so it was just ultimately the important point I wanted to draw across was that it was like the two matches were like watching each other, right?
Yeah.
And it was like they were both stalling to see what would happen, and that's bad, right? And
yep.
Yeah.
And it caused a lot of, like, a lot of people were upset, like, over this, and you know,
so that was the problem, was that table three and table four were too busy watching each other's games to actually play, because what they were going to do depended on the other table.
And one of the big things is table four, one of the players actually during the match asked the judge if he could go to the washroom, from what I hear. And the judge allowed that, and Lucas on table three is just like he shakes, like he's like, what's going on? Like he can't ask to go to washroom too, right? Like, it's just like, it was a weird thing. And it's just like, you know, is there a way to improve this? Should like pair
it? Absolutely.
Like,
it's something that we've talked about amongst our own judges, and something that we've had come up at our PTQ. So that situation affected me at the last PTQ I was at, because I did the John Stern. I went and I drew my first round. I had an unintentional draw, and then I played through, and I ended up being like the guy who messed up all of the tiebreaker math at the end, because I was the X21 or the X11 or whatever like that. So if I won, I was in. If I lost, I was out. But since I already had the draw, I made it so that if everyone drew, there would be nine guys with
that record,
the X11 record. Mm-hmm. So I made a whole bunch of people have to play, and then a bunch of guys played Dream Crushers slash, played for position. And in my match, I ended up being the feature match at our shop. And I had friends of people at the other tables. Like, I knew what matches were important to me. And I saw those guys going and watching their friends and then coming over to me and asking, oh, how's the match going? And I was playing against Ichan, and I was just like, it's going good. Oh, who won? Somebody. Like, I was just like, so like, I'm not giving you any information. I am not like letting you guys do that, because if I win, they all just draw and I'm out.
Yeah. Right.
So I won. I packed up my stuff. We were very, very quiet about it. Eric was like super accommodating in that sense. And those guys ended up playing. But we were talking afterwards, like, what's the judge solution to that? And really what it comes down to is that we have the power to do a lot of things. And one of the things is watch the game, make sure it's being played at a reasonable pace of play. And after a game's done, if you need to, pick up a match and bring it to a different table. If, like, you've got to put together, if one of your friends figures it out, even if you figure it out, like, you're playing a game, and I'm in my situation where I know that if Magic is played, I have a chance, but these guys are watching my game to see if I win, and they're just going to draw and knock me out. You can call a judge over and just say, hey, I'd like to speak away from the table with you. Here's what's going on. What can you do to help? And the judge might be in a position where they're like, well, you know what? We can pick them up and move them to another table. We'll watch the games, make sure that they're played at a reasonable pace of play. And in between games, we'll pick the guys up and put them on a different table.
Yeah.
Not every judge is going to want to do it that way. That's what our group decided is a reasonable thing to do there, just to kind of get guys apart. Because when you're slowing down the game for that, like, one, you want to make sure the tournament's running fast. And as much as it like sucks to pick up some guys and move them to another table, you know, there's a delay that's built in there. The fact that they're slow playing each other and you're kind of watching, you're trying to push it forward, but both tables are kind of playing off of each other like that. I think that that's where you're just like, okay, we're just going to get this going again. We're going to sacrifice the 2 minutes to move you in order to save ourselves in the long run. So that's how I would handle it at my tournament. I don't know if there's set policy for that. I'm sure that there's, you know, like L3s, L4s who've got a lot more experience with that. And I hope if they're listening to the show, they'll chime in the comments, but that's what we would do.
I'm just curious, Jared, is it just too weird or bad for judges or organizers if you just like randomize the seedings in the last round? Like, I haven't thought of like the negative side of doing that. So maybe you can chime in on that.
You know, like I don't know if the software accommodates that.
Right.
If the software accommodates that, then that might be the best solution for it. Because it kind of keeps guys, you know, looking at their tables and stuff like that, not looking over their shoulders and stuff. And it makes it a lot easier to place. So that might be a way to go about it. But I don't think that functionality is really there. And right. Kind of making the guys go to different tables, like, you want something that you can hand out match slips effectively. Like, in a big tournament like that, there's a certain accounting aspect that just needs to be maintained, an administration protocol. And having players all over the place is kind of crazy. Now, if it's your top eight and you have to make the exception for like two or three matches, then, hey, you've got the ability to kind of spread people out if you need to. Like, that's a thing out of your bag of your bag of tricks. But if you still got, like, you know, a bunch of guys who are playing, you still got 20, well, 20 matches, probably ridiculous, but maybe 20 matches because people are playing for prizes. You're just going to make a big mess.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, my whole thought, like, my suggestion, my game plan would be, if I'm called over or if I notice, to kind of step in and just separate them.
Okay. Yeah. It was just, like, really weird to see that and just to see, like, but, like, yeah. Ultimately, it didn't affect the results because I think Cappy finished, like, in, like, 10th or 11th anyway, so his breakers were not enough. But, you know, it was, like, it was just weird seeing, like, you know, what's going on. They're looking at each other. Well, I wasn't there, so I don't know. But, you know, enough talk was made that, you know, something definitely happened and very reminiscent of GP Vancouver.
Is there a big, honestly, is it a huge issue to just ask to move? Like, Can't you just play anywhere you want?
Technically, you're supposed to go to your seat, and you're supposed, yeah. You're supposed to report to your seat. And
sure, and then there. You get your match slip, and then you're like, okay, we're going to go play somewhere else.
Well, that's the thing where you want to call a judge. And if you call a judge and the judge okays it, then yeah, go for it.
But what random situation would a judge not okay that? Like, it just, it seems like it's unintuitive.
Why do judges want you in your correct seat? It comes down to time is coming up, and there's three matches that are still in the system that count, and one's supposed to be at table 5, one's supposed to be at table 11, one's supposed to be at table 16. You send judges out there to go see if the results are done or to watch over the matches to make sure they're going, and nobody can find one of the matches because those guys got up and played somewhere else. And in between matches, lots of people are playing Magic. They're, you know, might be playing tournament Magic. Maybe the result slips under something so you can't see it.
Mm.
So, like, that's kind of, like, the situation. At a GP-level event, when there's, like, 10 minutes left on the clock,
mm-hmm.
they start grabbing judges and sending them to tables to kind of bird dog. They're like, you know, you go and you cover these, like, 20 tables, and you're just going to patrol in there and grab match slips and bring them back. And if you see any time extensions out there, come back and let me know so I know how many matches, like, if I'm going to have any critical matches that need somebody on them because they've got the time extension and that kind of stuff.
Hmm.
But yeah, if you want to move tables and stuff like that, again, like the biggest thing you can always do in a situation like that where you think you're getting gamed or you think something can happen, where you think something can make the game a little bit funner, call a judge. If you don't want to accuse the guy sitting right next to you that these guys are trying to sandbag to screw me, ask to speak to him away from the table.
You can that's absolutely true. Some people don't like confrontation, you're right. Yep.
And some people like to just lay it all out.
I remember specifically at Boston, I was playing against a girl. She was playing Merfolk. She was actually very good. And her husband and friends, I guess, were all behind her at some point. And, like, watching her play, and they're watching, you know, like, watching her draw and what she's doing. And, like, she's really good because I can't read her all that well.
Yeah.
But I'm reading all of them like an open book. Right? And so, like, at one point, I just get frustrated because they're all just, like, it's just distracting. And finally, I'm like, guys, you're not doing her any favors by standing behind her because I'm reading you all like an open book. So if you want to help her, go away. They got the message pretty quick.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. You're not doing her any good. Anyways. But yeah, it's, I'm really glad to hear that M15 is good. That's really, really encouraging.
Yeah, I really like it, actually.
It's very good.
So, I mean, Cons is coming. Cons apparently is ridiculous. Everything that Jerry Thompson says is true, which is not a lot, but what he does say is that Cons is off the charts. So that's going to be pretty sweet. Like, I still remember drafting Shards of Alara, and, like, playing Alara Block was kind of like the last time. Like, Alara Block and Zendikar Block, I think, were, like, the only times I actually played Limited. Yes, it happened. And I have very fond memories of that, of those sets and those draft formats. So, like, if Cons is going to be anything like Shards, but with all the lessons that they've learned along the way since then, like, it's going to be ridiculous. So I'm pretty pleased. I actually drafted...
I got a little bone to pick with Jerry.
Yeah?
Yeah, trying to convince us to play Kaijudo when they axed it today.
Yeah, I think it's because he wanted to try to save it.
Oh, okay. That might have been good. But he sold me a lot of cards for a good price also.
Oh, did he? You got owned! Oh, fuck! You got owned by Jerry T!
Yeah, that's funny. That's rough. The game was good. It just didn't market it well.
Yeah. Well, the writing's on the wall when they cancel the TV show, bro. Sorry.
I didn't even know there was a TV show.
That was like the whole driving thing.
Oh, did the TV
show? I didn't even know that, yeah.
Yeah, there was a TV... Yeah, so like there was a Duel Masters TV show, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like that was their whole thing. I mean, it worked for Yu-Gi-Oh! Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like...
Lucky night in Canada for cards.
Damn right. And it worked real well for Yu-Gi-Oh! So they wanted to continue on, and they did the same thing for... The other dumb game with the translucent cards.
Is that the Vanguard one?
No. gosh darn it all, it was still monsters and stuff. My kid played it for a bit. Anyways, whatever. They had like the almost like the cards that, you know, you move a card, you like tilt it back and forth and it's like corrugated or whatever, and it like looks like it's moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so they had that, and Chaotic was the name of the card game. That was it. Chaotic.
Oh, is it not around anymore?
No. Well, I don't know whether it is or not, but like Chaotic had a show. I don't see the show on anymore. You know, like Beyblades, Kaijudo, right? So now the Kaijudo show was canceled, and that's sort of like the writing on the wall. But yeah, it's done. There's one more expansion, and then God knows. Now, they are saying that they're not printing any more paper. So that's not to say that they're not totally abandoning the game and just making it a digital. There are some people that are actually speculating that it is going to become a strictly digital game.
Speaking.
And that might be one of the things that they try to compete with Hearthstone with. But we'll see how that all goes.
Man, everybody's talking about Hearthstone.
A lot of people are playing Hearthstone.
Yeah.
I like the iPad app.
I mean, that makes it pretty convenient, not going to lie.
Yeah, and so, somehow they can find it in their business model to give half their money to Apple, so.
Fuck. Good old Apple.
Well, like, that's the thing, is that I'm sure that their user base has gone up significantly from having it on iPad.
Absolutely. I mean, they saw it on Duels as well, I'm sure.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe this Magic Online client with all of its extra windows and stuff like that will work well on my iOS device.
Wait.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. So I drafted this week.
Cool.
And?
I drafted this week.
How was it?
Well, I drafted Vintage Masters.
Oh.
And it was pretty good.
Did you win?
I 3-0'd my Vintage Masters draft.
Oh, so you're the ringer now.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that I'm the ringer. I would say that the ringer that I had on the show in Tom Martell was the ringer. But Tom Martell joined me on my stream, and we drafted Vintage Masters. So we had, like, some discussions about the archetypes and all that jazz, and we opened, you know, pack one, pick one, Battle Screech.
What does that card do? Because everybody's talking about how good it is.
So this card's retarded. So it is... Sorry. For those of you that took exception to that, this card is extremely good. It is a white 2 sorcery that puts 2/1/1 white bird creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. Okay, no big deal. But it has flashback. Tap 3 white creatures you control.
Hmm.
Okay. So why is this good?
Because it's a better triplicate spirits.
So what happens is you've got. You play it in the deck with all of the amazing 1, 2, and 3 drops. Okay? So, like, you probably have 2 or 3 guys. You probably have, like, 2 or 3 guys on the table anyway by the time you're casting Battle Screech. That you basically get to cast Battle Screech, tap one of your guys, plus the 2 birds you just made with the original one to make 2 more birds.
Okay.
So it's, like, 4-in-1 card.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like Souls.
Very much so, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, like, that card is really good, but when you don't have to pay mana for your Battle Screech, for your flashback, it's even grosser. So, yeah, I got, like, one of the most amazing decks ever. I think I got 3 Deathblade Elites, which is, like, a 1-1 with Provoke that has a fog effect. So you can kind of, like, attack and take out one of their biggest blockers. I got 2 Benelish Trappers, which are basically just, like, 1-2 tap guys. I got 3 Soltari Troopers, which when they're swinging are 2-2 Shadow Guys. I got 2 Phantom Nomad. These are all 2 drops. Phantom Nomad, 2 drop also, which is like the Phantom Claws, where it's a 0-0 and it gets 2-1 on counters, and when it's dealt damage, you prevent all the damage and just take a counter off. So like I've got all these nice, efficient, you know, like 2 drop beaters. I also got a Wild Mongrel, which is apparently one of the most unkillable cards in the entire set. So, Wild Mongrel is green 1 for a 2-2, and it has a special ability that says, discard a card, Wild Mongrel gets +1/+1, and becomes the color of your choice until end of turn. So, a lot of the removal is like, destroy a target non-black creature, or exile, which is like, exile target non-white creature, right? So a lot of the cards that would just kill this, you can just make it whatever color you want, and it's really tough to remove, right? So, it's a high-demand common, because the blue-green madness decks want it like crazy. And the Wild Mongrel itself is just, like, it's so efficient. So, like, the green-white decks want it and all that jazz, too. So that's sweet. Plus, it, like, wins combat. Anyways, you get the idea. I got an Armadillo Cloak, which we all know what that is, right? That's the 2-2 yeah. Trample Lifelink aura. I also got an Elephant Guide as an aura, which is, like, the creature gets 3-3, and when the creature dies, you get a 3-3 elephant. So it's, like, two guys. I got a Radiance Judgment for removal. I got two Gust Cloak Harriers, which are like 2/2 flyers, and whenever they become blocked, you can untap it and remove it from combat. So it's like always getting in. I got a Sidar Jabari, two Battle Screechers, a Mist Moon Griffin, two Battle Screechers. Yeah, you heard me. A Foil Karmic Guide and a Radiant Archangel, plus a Strip Mine. So basically, it's like 17 lands, this absurd curve, and this like also ridiculous top end of like recursion or this huge radiant that just like drops itself onto the table. My guys almost never get blocked, and it was ridiculous. Like, I lost a single game throughout the entire draft. It was ridiculous, but it was really interesting learning about the format since I got to play it a bunch. So I actually think I've got Frank Lepore and Melissa DeTora are both going to join me on stream on Monday. And we're going to draft some more Vintage Masters. Sweet. And see how that goes. Yeah.
That'll be a fun event.
I think so. I mean, they're a riot. Hanging out with them in Boston was hilarious. So I'm really excited about being able to do it on stream. Should be good. So, yeah, it's fun. And then, of course, like, because you win, and Vintage Masters packs are worth infinite, you basically, like, double up.
So oh, that doesn't happen on Magic Online anymore, though.
Well,
still winning an event and losing money.
I don't know how you figure that, since I paid like 25, like, aren't Vintage Masters packs like $7, 7 tickets or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I paid 25 tickets to get into the event.
Mm-hmm.
And I won, a QP, no, 2 QPs, 1 QP, and 8 Vintage Masters packs.
Holy shit. Yeah,
it's an 8-4. It's an 8-4.
They obviously have to knock down the price support on that event.
So
they're going to the poorhouse.
So I like doubled up. I more than doubled up. It's like $7. So what? Yeah, I did fine. Like, that's ridiculous, right? Yeah,
want to fight about it?
Right. So I think it's pretty good. Now I just need to do that a few more times. But I actually had an amazing fan of the stream, I guess, or show, unsure which, from I have no idea, Norway, maybe? Hold on, I'm going to click on his Facebook profile to find out. Because, like, there is fucking... Oh, he lives in New Zealand. He's from Norway. That's what it is. Okay. And I have, like, zero idea how to pronounce his name, whether it's, like, Oystein Kallas. Like, I don't have any idea. But amazing guy on Twitter. He is... at Oystein HK, so OYSTEINHK. So shout out to that guy. He fucking sent me this image file with like a bunch of different archetypes that he got to the finals of 8-4s with. So it's like, oh look, a blue white deck, or like a mostly white aggro deck. Oh look, a goblin deck. Oh look, a red white aggro deck. You know, like, and it's oh, there's a green white deck. There's a blue-red deck. There's the black, mostly black, splash blue deck. But, like, there's the slide deck. You know what I mean? Like, the madness deck. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's so amazing. It's been such a valuable resource for me to really sort of, like, get to know the value of the cards and, like, what decks are looking for what cards, which is, like, really important when you're trying to craft it together. So, it was a lot of fun. The decks all seem pretty sweet. It looks like it's all basically, like, Battles of the Weenies. There's not a lot of, like, huge guys. Like, you get an Arrogant Worm on the table, and it is decisively the largest creature ever. But there's a bunch of, like, sweet, powerful rares. The rares are, like, really big, bomby. I mean, Brago is just dumb. So, yeah, I'm pretty pleased. I'm excited to see how this goes a little bit further. Shout out to that guy. That made me happy.
That guy.
Mm-hmm. I have two more shout-outs, actually, while we can do this. I've got Steven Ledger. Sledger on MTGO, and of course Michael, Don't Hex Me Bro on Twitter, and Fitch 5000 on MTGO, who volunteered to loan me some Brimazes for my sweet standard brew that I keep tinkering with. I'm very, very pleased. Thank you very much, guys. I would not be able to do that without you. So, shout outs for those guys. Yep. Vintage Master is so sweet. So now I need to learn how to cube. Still need to learn how to cube. Is the WotC cube on CubeTutor? Is this a thing?
Probably. You have to look.
Someone's got to have it on there.
Okay, I have no idea where it is. So, like, somebody hit me up with it. Link it in the comments. Hit me up on Twitter. Email me, whatever. I have, like, zero idea how to use CubeTutor or how to find this thing. If you guys know where it is, hit me up. Because I need all the help we can get for this MTGOCC. And what I will do, very likely, is I will run a stream, probably on my personal account, where I will get, like, Jay or whomever or whoever wants to do it, and we will just, like, mono-draft cubes through CubeTutor. And we can That'd discuss cool. it. Yeah. So I, like, 100% will do that. That'll be absurd.
Can you have, like, multiplayer drafts on CubeTutor?
No.
No?
That's poop.
Yeah. But, like, I would absolutely do that. I cannot wait. So, so good. Let's do that. Do it.
Do it.
So, yeah, I've just been farming tickets, actually. Or, as it turns out, M15 packs. With this stuff.
Yeah, it's nice that M15 packs are, like, actually worth something.
So good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just farming with my dumb Naya Walkers deck. It's pretty funny. Yeah, that's what I did on Sunday, the WMCQ. I updated this deck from Journey, added some Nissa Worldwakers, a Johnny Steadfast in the sideboard. Let me tell you how good a Johnny Steadfast is. Oh, oh wow. Wow. Like, if you are looking for a card that you need to help turn around your burn matchup, or, like, your like, little aggro matchup, this card's ridiculous. You play, like, a Fleece Mane Lion, or a Brimaz, or a Smiter, or a Courser, or something, like, big, and then you go into Steadfast, and you just, like, plus attack. It is insurmountable. It is almost insurmountable every time. So, unbelievable card against burn. And then, like, also sort of for those, like, those early rush decks or those mid-range mirrors or whatever, where you need something that is going to help bust open. So are you like, you're just sort of in this limbo where you're creating this board state back and forth where you just keep building forces. And then you like drop a Johnny and he instantly, just like the Johnnies of old, just, you know, 1-1 on everything. Now my guys are a little bigger, swing in, you know, or like bigger, kill you. So it's pretty sweet. He's a very good card. I'm actually very impressed with him. Very impressed with him right now. So. It's fun. Fun deck times. I actually had somebody email me and ask me about the list in particular, which was hilarious because he's been playing Team Geist and said, yep, I've been playing it a lot and I love it. So, you know, don't Aaron Coleman is his name. And so he, I guess, is going to the Invitational this weekend.
Okay.
And he said, you show me the promised land to Team Geist, so I'm all in. He's like, what's the deck look like? What's the sideboard look like? And because I was playing it on my stream on Monday, too. And I sent him, like, this big, huge email about it. And it looks like he's actually going to play it at the Invitational. So I would just, like, lose my shit if he goes on a tear, hits coverage, blows up. That would be pretty sweet. It'd be like, lightning does strike twice. Anyway, it'd be pretty sweet. So what are you guys doing this weekend? Big plans? What's up?
I have to work this weekend, but I've taken the Saturday off to go play in a PTQ, because I've been testing Modern for a while now.
Good. Good. This is the one like that I guess all the Edmonton crew and all those guys are going to?
Well, yeah, it's in Edmonton, so we're going to get a pretty decent turnout, like probably 150, 175 is my guess, somewhere in that range.
Nice.
And then we've got another PTQ in like 4 weeks, because we've got the WMCQ.
Right.
So
yeah, nice. Now that one's going to be M15 though.
Yeah, that'll be M15 limited. So that one I'm actually going to judge.
Oh, okay.
The PTQ and play in the WMCQ.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, good luck. There are some Team Geist converts among you.
Yes, I know the curls.
I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited. Yeah. Green black players are biting the dust. But yeah, I think there's going to be some really neat decks, I think, that are going to be around there, if what I've been hearing is correct. So that's pretty exciting stuff for you. Should be fun times. But yeah. KYT, what are you doing this weekend? You playing in any of the PTQs that are going on or what?
Nope. This weekend will be my weekend off, and because I'm going to promise some girlfriend time. And next weekend, because next weekend is another PTQ WMCQ weekend, so I'll be booked with Magic on both days again. So got to make some time, and going to spend some time. And so I won't have to worry about Modern anymore. And basically, when I have time this weekend, I'm going to spend that time testing for Standard and testing many Genesis Hydra decks to see which one I like.
You just, that card, eh? That's the one? That's the card?
That is 100% the one.
Wow.
Heard it here, folks.
That's neat. All right. Jer, we know what you're doing. Jay, what are you doing this weekend?
What am I doing this weekend? Oh, I have a Magic Friends bachelor party to go to, but he's like a cool hipster guy. So it might involve Magic and it might not.
Interesting.
I hope it does, actually. I never even considered that up until just now. All right. Well, sweet. I hope that happens. And then I'll probably draft on Sunday if I can, because I love M15. And that's about it. D&D on Sunday night. Fucking sweet.
Do you guys like play D&D or do you play Pathfinder?
We play Pathfinder because we're not nerds.
Oh.
That's awesome. That's such a good response. Anyways. That's good. No, it's cool. I mean, like, it's... I have nothing bad to say. It's just funny the way you put it.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's it. Like, you know, just... Same old, same old. I'm trying to like get into Standard and or like, you know, like want to play like a format, but it's just like so bad.
Come on up for the WMCQ.
It's probably not worth it.
I think, Jay, honestly, I would keep, okay. I would take a look at the block decks that came out of the Journey Pro Tour, honestly. And I would start looking at those as like, archetypes for you to familiarize with, because I think that a lot of the like top decks now as they are today are going to like cease to exist in rotation. So you have the opportunity now to like get ahead of Standard and hit the ground running when Cons launches.
Running.
My issue, somebody brought this up the other day that was like really on point, but my issue is also the fact that like, I don't have a deck to roll into Standard anymore. So I used to take a deck and win with it, and then it would go up in value because I'd be playing the best deck. So then I'd sell that and have enough money to play, like, other decks and stuff. But now I don't have that, like, base to start from. So I have to, like, start all over, which means I have to invest a lot of money into a deck now. And because I'm out of practice, it means I have to invest probably a lot of money into a lot of decks because I'd have to, like, eventually learn what the best deck is and et cetera.
Can't you just, like, hit BZ up and be like, dude, just leave this up for me tonight, I'm coming.
No, he doesn't do that anymore. I don't know why.
He doesn't do that in general, or he just doesn't do that for you?
Like, he basically stopped playing Magic, like, except for only big tournaments.
Oh.
Because he, like, started working at the store quite a bit. So, like, I'm not sure if he would, like, even have the deck and stuff, right? The other thing, too, is because he works at the store... Mike lets him borrow his cards, but he doesn't, like, but, you know, obviously, like, Mike's not letting me borrow his cards, you know, because they're, like, all Korean, Japanese foil, everything, and Brian doesn't feel comfortable, and I'm not gonna ask Mike, and Mike's never around, so even if we could ask him, you know what I mean, he's not around.
Sure.
So it's just, like, it's one of those things, whereas before, it was, like, Brian's cards that Brian was lending me, but now it's, like, you know, he's gonna, like, lend me Korean foil Abrupt Decays to test the deck at an FNM.
Yeah.
That I'm paying $10 to go to. It's not even free anymore. If it was free, maybe. But, you know, it's not free really anymore.
Yeah, true. All right.
Yeah. And that makes a difference, I find.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that makes a big difference. Well, that's too bad.
Yeah. I mean, I still like to play. It's just, you know, it's, that's a lot of work. Like, I never realized how important that was, having, like, a Cobblade turn into a Delver, turn into a Mono Black, turn into a, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
That stuff's, like, that's a really important part of staying competitive, is having the funds. And it's not, like, it's not that it's pay to win. It's just, like, but when you want to, like, get a deck, even starting from scratch, it's like, well, when your mana base is even $5 each, and you got to have, like, four of those and four of the chalk and whatever. I mean, like, even at $5 each, that's $40 already.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
And I mean, if I'm spending $40 on a game, I'd rather buy some sweet new fucking Star Wars stuff, because they have some really awesome new stuff that came out.
Really? Like what?
Well, there's, like, the Imperial Aces that they showed up, like, last year, where it's, like, new colored, like, super colored TIE Interceptors. Like, they're, like, the Imperial Guard. They're all, like, red and purple and shit instead of just gray. And it actually looks really cool. And then, so this year they've made Rebel Aces, which is, like, the exact same, but it's X-Wings and Y-Wings or some shit. And then they have a fucking Carillion Corvette that's, like, as big as a playmat.
Really?
Yeah, and I really want to fucking go buy that thing.
Wow.
Yeah, and I have, like, $200 of store credit at Trilogy, and they have one, so I want to go buy it because it's, like, $100.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I think something that would be really cool. Me and Garrett played Star Wars the other day, and it kind of reminded me that it's, like, still kind of super fun.
Still so. Kind of?
Well, I mean, it is. It's just, like, the thing is, like, because Garrett even said it, he's, like, the problem with playing, like, anything competitively is it's, like, you get to a certain, it's, like, you get to a certain point, and then, like, it's not fun anymore to just, like, to keep playing the same old stuff. But then it's, like, well, do you want to just fucking turbo ranch your friends? You know what I mean? Like, is that fun for them, too?
Yeah.
And is it fun for you, even? Like, probably not. So, you know. I mean, like, so I was talking to Amanda something. The one that is on Twitter. Fuck.
Stevens?
Yeah! Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah, Amanda Stevens?
It is, I think. And she's on, like, Red Deck Wins.
Yeah.
And stuff. Yeah, okay. I was talking to her. She tweeted about, like, does your LGS have a casual night and for cheap or free? And if they don't, do you, like, why do you speculate that is? And if they do, does it do well? And if it doesn't, why do you speculate that is? And I basically asked her, like, just a bunch of, not rhetorical questions, but, like, just a bunch of questions that you have to ask yourself before you talk about and or even attempt to have, like, a casual night. And this kind of goes back into what I was talking about with Star Wars. But basically, like, for example, like, Phoenix doesn't have a casual night. Like, you can always go to Phoenix and just play Magic, and people do that constantly. But you can't, but they don't have, like, I don't know. And then this is the thing, is that when you think about it, like, what does casual night mean? Does that mean that they have a sanctioned casual night? Can you sanction something casually? And then, like, if you do, what does that even mean? It just goes on your fucking record that you went to a store and played Magic? So, like, that's kind of weird. And then it's like, so if you have a casual night, is it casual, like, as in, like, don't play net decks? Well, what happens if a guy's not playing a net deck, but he's still playing a pack rat? Like, or a Delver, or, you know what I mean? Like, that stuff starts to get kind of sticky. And then it's like, well, what happens if you have casual night? Like I started saying, like, well, instead of calling it casual night, why don't you call it, like, beginner night? But then the problem becomes, like, well, what if I want to just play casual Magic? Like, there's a lot of times right now, since I kind of backed up off the competitive scene, that I want to play Arch Enemy Plane Chase. I want to play casual Conspiracy Draft, where, like, if I lose, but it's epic, I don't care. You know? There's a lot of stuff like that happening. And it's like, well, is that casual night? Or is that just, like, or am I too good for casual now? Like, how does that kind of work? So that stuff's, like, kind of awkward. And then it's like, well, you know, what about things like, you know, good cards and bad decks, or bad cards and good decks, or how do you even police that, like really? And so I kind of feel like that's kind of the same way with Star Wars. So when I say it's still kind of sort of fun, I mean, like, it's super fucking fun, but there's not even, like, a remote, even close to competitive and or regular play group that I would want to play with in my city. Like, I don't think enough people know about it. I got a lot, like, this is the problem with Twitter, right? Twitter is such a great tool that me and you and Jeremy and KYT have access to, because we can basically be friends with people as if they lived in our neighborhood, like across the world. And it's super great, and you can connect with people, and you can play games with them that actually matter. Like, you can play Moto, you can play online PTQs, you can all fly to GPs and meet each other. But one thing that I really kind of, I am left like feeling like poorly or sad or depressed or down or whatever the correct emotional response here is, but about it with Twitter is that, like, I feel like basically I've made a lot of really great friends that I never get to see. So it's almost like you have a best friend that you grew up with or that you worked with for like 5 years or something, and then they moved away and you're like still friends with them, but you like, you drift apart, you never get to see them. And then when you do get to see them, it's kind of cool, but you know, it's only for a little while and et cetera. And that's kind of what Star Wars is like. I got so many people into Star Wars. There's still people that just randomly tweet me out of the blue. Hey, blah, blah, did you see this? Did you see that? And it's like super cool, but there's no way for me to play Star Wars with them.
Yeah.
You know, and out of the, say, let's say I got, let's say, like, let's be really moderate and modest and conservative. And let's say that I got 20 people into Star Wars. I mean, more than 20 people tweeted me about it today. So I know I got more than 20 people into it, but let's even just say I got 20 people into it. What are the odds that any of those people even live in the same city?
Yeah.
You know? So that kind of sucks. And then, like, so I was going to go, like, I have $200 or $300 of store credit at Trilogy, which is like the, which is where all the generally, like, Star Wars stuff is. Because Sentry Box has it too, but they generally sell out a lot quicker. So I was going to buy that stuff, and I've been waiting to buy it for like probably a month or a month and a half. Cause it's like one of those things where I just don't want to like impulse buy it. I want to wait to see if I actually want it. And then it's like, well, I do actually want it, but the last time I played Star Wars, it was snowing on the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I played with Garrett on Tuesday, and we both commented that. We're like, man, this is super great. This is super fun. And he's like, yeah, we haven't done this in a long time. And then he's thinking about it, and he's like, actually, we haven't done this since, like, there was snow on the ground. Like, it's August.
Wow.
So, you know, we haven't done this in fucking forever. And it's like, yeah, you're right. And then it's like, so am I going to go and spend like $100 on a fucking Krillian Corvette? Or am I going to spend like, you know, $40 on some Imperial Aces that are like super cool and that I want so bad and they open up like a new facet to the game? Or is it like, eh, fuck, I'll just keep playing with my same old because, you know, I play twice a year now.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how I feel like it's with Magic too. Like, when I was playing Magic competitively, like with Delver and stuff, and F&M's every week, it was like, you know, you were in touch with people, you did stuff, you got to do things. And then now that I'm not playing them, it's like, you know, I can play Cube every once in a while, but other than that, like, you kind of lose touch with Magic. Like, I feel very out of touch with Magic.
Yeah.
In general.
Yep. Know? Yeah, that makes sense.
So.
That's sad.
Yeah, it sucks.
Because we miss you.
Yeah, it sucks. But, and it's hard to get back into once you're out of. Like, you know, like when you got back into Magic and you went crazy and you bought a box and then you bought two boxes and then you bought a deck and it sucked, but it was fun. And then you realized it sucked, so you bought another new deck and then another. And you realize, like, how much fucking money you spent. And then it's like, when you get out of Magic, you forget that it costs that much more money to get back in, you know? That's like, and that's a huge barrier. For players like that want to play like Modern and stuff, and they try to like bridge that with like the Modern event deck, but it's not good. Like, the Modern event deck and any iterations of it have never come close to winning or doing well at anything. So. You know,
I mean, the Modern event deck isn't terrible. As far as inexpensive options go.
Well, I mean, yeah, you could play any of those FNM precons or whatever that they made, but it's just like, it's just not worth it if you want to actually attempt winning and getting better. You know, like, I could play any inexpensive anything. I could go to Phoenix and just pick up a pile of commons and play it and, like, play goblins or something and probably go 2-2 or 3-1 if I got lucky. But we all know that's not how Magic works if you want to be competitive, right? So.
Hmm. Well, I mean, it's definitely a challenge, but you know, like anything that's worth doing, it's...
Yeah.
Juice is worth the squeeze, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's gotta be worth it. Like, I'm just still think Cube is super worth all the money I have invested in, and the fact that all my money's in that and not Standard, so I can't play Standard. Like, that's still way worth it to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
And I mean, like, and you get so much joy out of Cube.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's totally worth it. I agree. Whatever makes you happy.
Yep. And I'll try to get a Cube night going.
It'd be good.
It'd be fun.
It'd be good. Yeah, I think you'd be surprised at who might show up. But maybe you won't be. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
Man, yeah. I don't know. People might get in from Edmonton.
That'd be cool.
Care.
Anyways. It's only like a 3-hour drive, dear. It's like a 15-minute plane ride. Come on.
Hitch with Curly. He's going to make it happen.
There you go.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Anyways. Yeah, so that's what's going down. So Cube Night. So I'm going to hang out with Jay. Fuck! So super exciting. The folks at Hasbro were amazing, and when we booked my travel, I was able to leave a day early so that I could spend like the better part of 36 hours with Jay.
Yeah, it's gonna be fucking awesome.
I'm very excited. So yeah, that's gonna be really neat. Because I haven't seen Jay since like the random airport visit, before that the wedding. So
yeah,
I am excited.
Yeah, I regret not cubing with KYT.
See.
But I mean, I still had fun doing whatever I was doing. Oh, playing Wolf. But I mean, like, but at the same time,
it's okay. Well,
you know, I think, like, as I age, like, that would have been super awesome. Like, all the cubing I did with PSG and stuff was, like, the highlight, one of the highlights for sure. It was, like, that's super awesome that you get to cube with guys that you don't normally get to. And, like, playing Magic with guys that you don't normally get to is super fun.
Okay, we'll draft M15 on a Sunday when they...
So the other thing that I did this week is I played some Commander.
Oh, yeah?
And I actually, like, for shits and giggles, I busted out the... I got my hands on a Brago.
Oh, yeah, like the conspiracy guy?
Yeah. And he's, like, stupid.
What does he do? Like, when he hits, you blink?
Yeah, blink whatever you want that's not a land that you control.
Yeah, yeah, it's very good. Very, very good.
Yeah, so I tried to find what I was going to put that in. Like, I didn't know what I was going to put it in terms of a deck and stuff, but I knew I wanted to do something with it, and I was, like, late because I went out golfing, and then we did golf and then came back, and I had to feed the kids, and then after the kids were fed, the boys came over and we played Magic, and I'd, like, had almost no time to, like, tune a deck. So I had the Bant Precon that I knew was, like, okay, right? But it had, like, some cute little tricksy cards in it, and I knew, so I'm like, all right, well, I'll quickly raid my collection, find out some stuff real quick, pulled out, like, 12 cards, and changed 12 cards in the list. One of them was Brago. And, like, used Derevi as the commander and just played. And smashed fucking face.
Yeah.
Holy Jesus. I didn't even realize how good Derevi was as a commander. Last time I played the deck, I must have just had miserable draws. So, I ended up getting, like, a Resto and a Flicker Wisp going and the Conjurer's Closet and...
Wow.
I finally put Deadeye Navigator on Flicker Wisp, and it was just like I was unkillable. It was absolutely just ridiculous. Oh, and Miss Meta Witch. Yeah. So, like, all the blink all day.
Yeah.
And like, Derevi himself is just really gross. Like, blinking, tapping down, mana ramp, all that jazz. So, I was like, that's 12 cards. This is going to be ridiculous. So, I've got to go through now, and I'm starting to, like, pull a bunch of cards out, and I'm consulting lists, and I'm like, bitten by the deck building bug, because I, like, pulled a bunch of pimp stuff out of a bunch of my commander decks, so, like, I have to now, like, take a bunch down or retool a bunch of them or whatever, so it's, like, taking the opportunity. But, yeah, like, I'm on the Derevi hook right now. Card's very, very good. I mean, there's a reason that it's banned in 1v1, right?
He didn't, who, Derevi?
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
As a commander, yeah.
I don't pay attention to any of that shit.
I know, just... normally I don't either, but it's just an expression of quality.
Yeah, Brago's not in my cube. He's, like, not good enough for my cube. Well, he is, but, like, I don't know, it's weird. I had a really long talk with TSG about multicolored in cube, and it's like, now I'm, like, I thought I had figured it out, but now I'm, like, super not figured it out.
How do you mean?
Shitty. Well, like, I was talking about doing multiplayer and how, like, I have cut a lot of my multicolored in cube, and I'm down to 5 of each color pairing, and that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so the 5 of each color pairing that I've done is, like, I want them to be somewhat synergistic with each other, right? So, like, the red-white cards, I could have played things like Legion's Initiative, or not Legion's Initiative, but the fucking... the enchantment that makes guys every turn.
Assemble the Legion.
Yeah, Assemble the Legion. But it's, like, a slow red-white card compared to, like, a fast red-white card that most of the other red-white cards are, right?
Right.
So I didn't put that in there. Like, the slowest one is a Johnny, and a Johnny can still go in a red-white aggro deck. You know what I mean? So in, like, blue-white, it's like Daxos and Geist for, like, the blue-white tempo equipment, like, kill you with your own stuff or kill you really quickly guy.
Yeah.
And then it's Supreme Verdict and Venser for, like, the blue-white control deck. That can also, those can also just be played in the same deck, right? Like, that's the great thing about Geist and Daxos is that, like, if you have them as control finishers, I mean, Daxos less so, but then they're fine. And then the 5th one is Detention Sphere, which again can be played in a tempo to remove a blocker or control to remove a bunch of shit, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, in black blue, all of the cards are either mill cards or deal with the graveyard. So there's Nemesis of Reason, Mind Funeral, and Ashiok. Which are, okay, like, the main mill cards, and Ashiok is also, like, a weird reanimator win the game guy. Mm-hmm. And then there's Consuming Aberration, Phoenix, and Rexxiel. So, again, like, some mill. And then they also, like, have control elements. Like, blue, like the Consuming Aberration and, like, Rexxiel don't need to be in a mill deck. They can just be your big finishers, right?
Yeah.
And same with Phoenix. Phoenix is just, like, not necessarily a mill deck. He can just be your win condition in blue-black control, right?
That makes sense.
So there's like that, and then and like so on and so forth, right? Like same with the red. The red has like just really good red black value guys. Red green has like, you know, things like Huntmaster and Bloodbraid Elf and Sarkhan Bowl and shit like that. So it makes sense to me. But then I was talking to TSG about it, and because I was looking at his multicolored, and his multicolored is like completely different. So some of the same cards are in there in certain color combinations, because they just have to be, right? Like, in green-red, you're going to be playing probably Xenagos and, you know, Bloodbraid Elf and Huntmaster. Like, those are the best cards. And, you know, in blue-white, you're probably going to be playing Geist for sure, because obviously that's the best one. And
yeah,
stuff like that. But he has, like, 5 cards that have no synergy at all. And the reason he does that is because he doesn't want people to draft, like, the blue-black deck, and for, like, the players to immediately know what, or, like, or at least have a really good idea of what they're playing.
So he wants, like, the cards to have, like, more versatility across a variety of, or more applications within, yeah, a variety of different formats.
Yeah, and for you to do things, like, you could just be playing, like maybe you're just playing blue-white because you just drafted blue and white cards. Like, I've played, like, it, like if you look at, like, core set drafting, yeah, a lot of times you're not playing a multicolored deck because of a sweet multicolored bomb. A lot of the times you're just, you know, you just drafted, you know, blue-white flyers or red-green guys, right? And then if you happen to pick up a cool red-green guy, then sweet. But if you don't, then so what, right?
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of thing with his cube. Like, I feel it's like, yeah, if you draft, you know, I mean, blue-white control is obviously a deck that's gone, you know, it's always been a deck in those two colors. So if you happen to get, you know, a Supreme Verdict, great. Or if you happen to get a Geist, great. But you're not going to, like, necessarily want to draft, like, Rexxiel and Nemesis of Reason and Mind Funeral and Phoenix and try to go for the blue-black mill deck that you obviously now have, like, 4 super mill bombs in.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, now it's confusing me. Like, every time that happens, like, basically every time I talk to TSG or Usman the Red or Zaxxel's, yeah, or Zaxxel's Magic,
yep,
on Twitter, it's like they totally they're not wrong and they're not right. When they like, we don't like criticize each other's cubes and stuff. We just converse about them, and they just like completely change my view on cube. You know, like I'll complain and I'll say like, oh, the red white deck isn't very good, and they'll be like, yeah, that's because there's no good red white card, so just don't have a red white deck. And then I'm like, well, don't you have to? Because like, shouldn't all the 10 guilds and all the 5 colors be equally represented in blah blah blah? And they're like, well, yeah and no. Like, you can play a red white aggro deck by just having small red guys and small white guys and having, you know, efficient removal that just removes blockers and just kills them. You don't have to play fucking, you know, Sky Knight Legionnaire to have a red white deck.
Sure.
But like, I feel like I do if I'm going to play 5 red white cards. And like, red white is easily the worst color combination for, in terms of cube and like power level. There's no good red white card. Like, the in my cube right now, the 5 red white cards are Sky Knight Legionnaire, a Johnny Vengeance, Boros Charm, Lightning Helix, and like Saltari Gorillas, which should probably become the other Helix, War Leader's Helix.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, other than that, like, it's just like, and those are like horrible, like, those are like horrible fucking cards. Like, nobody opens a Sky Knight Legionnaire and wants to draft that. Even a Johnny Vengeance, it's like, he doesn't really fit in that deck either. Saltari Gorillas is, I think, in my opinion, a very good card. But people look at it and they're like, well, I've never seen this do anything good, so it's obviously shit. So they won't draft it. Lightning Helix is a good card, but it's often not worth it unless you're playing heavy, like, red-white. It's not a splash card. Like, it's always your 23rd card if you're playing three colors or 5 colors, right?
Yeah.
Same with Boros Charm. So it's like, should I even have these fucking 5 cards in my deck? I should just cut 4 of them, keep a Johnny Vengeance for, you know, because he's good.
Yeah.
And then have 4 slots open, but have a really low showing of red-white multiplayer. And then it's like, they're like, yeah, you should do that. I'm like, oh. Oh, okay. that seems bad, but all right. And then, you know, so I would have never considered that. I would have never considered, like, what he said, where he wants to have his multicolored be different. Because he wants it to be like, well, are they playing the green blue ramp deck, or are they playing the green blue control deck where they, you know, I don't know, have not a whole lot of real threats, but they have Simic Sky Swallower and Progenitor Mimic.
Yeah.
You know? So that stuff's kind of cool. And like, I tried to do that with green black a little bit, but everything else is really synergistic. You know, you try to keep like the best ones to fit that deck, thinking that the other cards will fill out other decks.
The other way you can look at it too is like, the different color combinations, although conceptually, you know, they've all had a lot of things that tie them together, they actually do get represented very differently over the years,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Like, you know, you look at a card like Coiling Oracle, right? So that is very clearly like a blue-green card. It should be a cube staple in your blue-green, as far as I'm concerned, because it's like ramp and draw a card. It's a perfect little card, right? Yeah. So if you've got like 5 slots, that should be 1. That is absolutely nothing like Simic Sky Swallower.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
Right? So, I mean, you've got options as well. Like, blue-black is a big one. Like, it doesn't have to all be mill. You know, there's all sorts of those sorts of things that they're all represented differently. I mean, the guilds all have a flavor, sure, you know, and like in Theros, all of the gods and stuff had a, you know, and that sort of stuff. But there's different opportunities if you stretch far back enough in Magic that you might be able to do some different shit.
My issue is just that, like, in terms of power level, those cards like drop off. Like in blue black, I had the guy, like the siren that, like, when he untaps, they discard and mill. Mm-hmm. But it's just like at the heart of the card, it's just like a 2/1 flyer for 3 that has like some impact, but generally just dies right away and doesn't synergize with any other blue black cards. So then it's like, well, for him to be in a blue black deck, you're playing blue black aggro. So now are the blue and black cards that I have in the cube going to support that? Like, no, I've decided not to go that way with blue and black. So then like a card like that comes out. So it's difficult for me to find a card that doesn't synergize with, say, for example, the blue black milk strategy that I have that also goes into blue and black decks, because the thing with cube is like, there might be an argument for card X or card Y, but if nobody drafts it, then it might as well cost 100 mana, right?
Sure. So you're playing Una, obviously.
Nope.
So I think like an example of one of those cards where it fits into your mill strategy, but you also want a card that's powerful enough that it can like slot into other strategies, like Una, Queen of the Fae fits the bill.
Yeah, it does, but it's got six mana symbols in it that are colored. There's no way that you play that. Same with like Divinity of Pride and Deus of whatever the thing is. I don't play
any of them. Well, I mean, like, those are a little bit further of a reach than Una, I think. But, I mean, like, there are decks that I think that would play that easily. But, I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah. Like, you know more about it than I do. I'm just, like, my gut's telling me that the card's, like, superbly good.
Yeah, it is. It's super powerful. I just like, try to limit that stuff because,
It's interesting that you put it that way because it almost makes it sound like you're calling the hybrid mana symbols, like, a liability. Cube that like lends itself to it being drafted not as often, whereas I would think that would be the opposite. Like I get that, like if I happen to just be in like a mono blue artifact ramp control deck, I'm like snap taking Una.
Yeah.
Right.
But that deck never come up in my cube. I don't think I've ever seen it.
Okay, so you're right. So maybe it is just like an extension. Maybe the symptom of the problem is. It's like deeper than you think it is.
Yeah, I think it is for sure. And that's what makes it difficult, right?
Yeah.
So, but.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But I'll try to draft my cube a bunch on Cube Tutor. I'll send you the link. Actually, I'll send it to Skype right now.
No, don't do that.
I already did.
Damn it. All right, so. I guess that's gonna just about wrap up this week then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Without Jeremy back.
Oh, yeah, he took off, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, he had to go and address a child problem, I think.
I had no idea.
All right, see you guys next week.
Take it easy, everyone. Peace.